It's your boy Trey J. Just a quiet kid with something to say. E from the Bay to 813, I'm talking Tampa. Someday soon, I'll be on your TV. Stay tuned. Yes, sir. Welcome to the 14th episode of Tuned In with Trey. I'm your host, Trey Johnson, and the word of the day is longing, which means a yearning desire. And to be honest with you, I'm longing for the day where I feel comfortable as a black man in America being a black man in America. Yeah, the word came out early, but it's coming again. Be on the lookout for when I use it. The song of the day is Change by J. Cole. You know, yeah, my intuition is telling me there'll be better days. I sit in silence and find whenever I meditate. My fears alleviate, my tears evaporate, my faith don't deviate, ideals don't have a date. Oh yeah, my intuition is telling me there'll be better days. Stay tuned. Today's episode is the second episode of February. That's right, Black History Month. We've been through a lot in the last year as many of our brothers and sisters were taken away from us. George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and Patrick Warren Sr., to name a few. This month is a celebration of our history, but today, I want to provide some hope that things will get better. I'm not alone today. I'm joined by a police officer. Yeah, I know, it's kind of crazy. I don't talk to the police typically, and I'm usually afraid of them. But the black officer today, and I think you're really going to like my guest. He grew up here in Gainesville, Florida, started his career with the Gainesville Police Department in 1975, 25 years before I was born. The retired police captain is currently the police chief here in Gainesville. He's seen a lot, and I think he has a good grasp on where our country is and how policing can improve in the future. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Chief Tony Jones to the show. How you doing, Chief Jones? I'm glad to have you.
I'm doing fine, and thank you all for having me.
Awesome. So I've been thinking about having this conversation for a while. I first heard your name in a class I took last semester. Got to meet your public information officer, Mr. Graham Glover, and he mentioned that you grew up here in Gainesville on the east side of town. For those of you who are listening to this, it's the black side of town. So I want to know what your childhood was like and what it was like to grow up in a segregated city.
I think you hit it just there. I grew up in East Gainesville, a neighborhood just north of Williams Elementary on Southeast 7th Avenue. Mm-hmm. And growing up in Gainesville, initially, we were in segregated schools. The only school that I could attend elementary would have been Williams Elementary because of the color of my skin. Then, right south of Williams Elementary, there was a high school known as Lincoln High School. I went just about a half a year there at Lincoln High School, and then I transferred to Howard Bishop Middle School. At that time, I wasn't one of the first groups that integrated that school, but I was in the second wave that integrated that school. And growing up at Williams Elementary, thing I noticed the immediate difference is the difference of culture. From, you know, you're going from a predominantly African American school to now you're going to a predominantly majority of population school, and so that was a sea change for me. But let me take you back. Even though when I was at Williams and a half a year at Lincoln, the thing I admired the most was the educators. They kept telling you that you are somebody. Even though you may have used books, they kept telling you that you can make it. You're going to have to, you know, get your core education out of the way, but you can be anything that you wanted to be. So I felt a sense of pride. I actually felt a sense of pride. In that transition, when I did go to Howard Bishop, I felt a sense of confusion, but they worked with us, and we went on from there. I graduated from Eastside High School after that.
Okay, my parents also graduated from Eastside High School.
Okay.
I think it's important what you mentioned about them telling you that you are somebody, not getting discouraged in the fact that your skin color is different, and sometimes that can be seen as inferior.
Right.
My question to you is, did you always want to become a police officer?
No, not really. When I became attracted to being a police officer because I wanted to make a change in society. So when I was at Eastside, I joined the Police Explorers. And that's a program for individuals between the ages of 14 and 18 that have an interest in law enforcement. It was, law enforcement was hated so bad during that time. I used to have to carry my uniform in a grocery bag, you know, because if they would see me in a uniform, then I would look at it like a sellout or whatever the case may be. But when I got into it, I said that not only can I help, people in my neighborhood, but I can help people, throughout this, city.
I like it. Carrying your uniform in a plastic bag, is it hard to be a black officer, even back then, but today in our society?
I think that it's gotten better, but when going back to carrying it in a grocery bag, it wasn't plastic. It was a paper bag.
A paper bag.
Because you couldn't see, you didn't want people to see what you had in the bag. So if I knew that I was going after school to a meeting, an explorer meeting, I would carry it in the paper bag. But as we progress in time, from the time I joined the police department up to now, I think that it got better. I won't say it's a utopia, yes, I have seen progress where the community, our own community, has began to accept being a police officer and being a police officer of color.
That's good. Is it different for you when you're out of uniform? Do you feel nervous as a black man in America?
When you're out of uniform, and you don't have, first of all, police officers are human beings. And so, naturally, I can remember, I left for a while and I went to this other college, in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. I'll say no more. I'll never forget. I got pulled over, I was on their University Boulevard, I was nervous. Like, what are you pulling me over for? The officer kindly told me, "You see that tag on your car?" And I said, "Yes." It was a rental. It's expired. Yes, I was nervous because I didn't know. I knew I was abiding by all the traffic laws and everything else. And just being human, I see this police car in the rearview mirror. And when I turned, it turned. When I turned, and I said, okay, so I'm going to just pull over. And when I pull over, that's what the officer informed me. But yes, there was some apprehension there.
Got you. I have not actually ever been pulled over. I'm hoping it stays that way. But from what I've seen on video, it seems very scary that lives could be taken in an instant. So our country has witnessed a lot of racial unrest in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say you have to compartmentalize your feelings in uniform inside of compared to outside of uniform?
Yeah, well, when you look at police use of force, the one thing that you have to look at is the entire story. You know, you have to look at some of them. I saw, I just could not wrap my head around it. Why did this happen? Some of them I saw that, you know, I'd love to see all the body camera images from the officers as well as cell phone images from the citizens, so I can gain a better understanding as to what actually transpired that caused an unfortunate incident involving a citizen.
I like it. The fact that you are saying that from because you're a human being, like you said. Exactly. We all have different ideas of what we thought occurred when we see videos like this. And coming from you, because you are a police officer, it's interesting that in different parts of the country, these events are perceived differently. Mm-hmm. So do you think that's a breakdown in the system, or does it is just really just county by county, state by state?
Well, and I think one of the things that it's different jurisdiction, and different jurisdiction have mm-hmm. different laws. I'll give you a classic example. When I first joined the Gainesville Police Department, we had and it was pervasive throughout the South, a fleeing felon law. Okay, so let me kind of tell you a little bit about that and what our chief did at the time when he came in. If a person steals an item or do a felonious crime, so let's say a person take a television that they know is not there and run. If the officer has exhausted all the mechanisms within their means, they were authorized to shoot that individual. And there was a Supreme Court ruling called Tennessee versus Garner, where that did happen. I think the person had a television or something that was fleeing from the police officer, and the police officer shot him. I'm proud to say that we had a police chief, matter of fact, the first police chief of color, Atkins Warren, who came to us from St. Louis Police Department, Missouri. When he saw the law, he said, well, I don't care what the law says, we're not going to do that any longer. We're not going to do that. He caught a lot of flack coming in to Gainesville, Florida, and saying that I could, even though it was permissible under the law, that he banned us from doing that. It took a lot of guts to do that during that time. His tenure was a little bit short after that.
Yeah.
But they changed. So when I say different laws, different states, you also have to take that into account as far as what's what. I would hope that one day this nation come up with a standardized practice of the use of force for all states, all communities, that we can govern ourselves by.
That sounds great, just to have a universal code of conduct. Right. In that case of he's coming from Missouri, how do you keep somebody in check who's ahead of, like, they're like at the top of the department? How do you hold them accountable?
He was, I think he made his presence known. Mm-hmm. He would come to our briefings, but the one thing that he did just to make sure you understood where he was coming from, he had a great career. He went on to retire and he went on to the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. And he retired there, and unfortunately he's no longer with us. But one thing that he did was he met with every police officer. He had your personnel file, and he talked with you. It wasn't a long conversation. He wasn't one of the long ones. But coming from an agency much larger than Gainesville, he had seen more what we had typically seen in our careers. And I think he laid out for us then, this is, if you're going to work for me, this is the way you're going to conduct yourself.
Gotcha. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Jacob Blake shooting. He was the man from Kenosha, Wisconsin. He walked around the car. He got shot in the back 7 times.
He lived. Well, he survived that, didn't he?
Yes. He is currently paralyzed. I want to know if you have issue with that, or if you saw something that you could have done differently to prevent what happened.
And see, my thing is, all I saw was a clip. Mm-hmm. I saw where the officers were shooting him when they did that. Now, I don't know. I would love to know a little bit more about it. Did they have an opportunity to use the taser? What precipitated all this? You know, I understand it was a disturbance previously, and the officers got there. And then the next thing I know is, of course, everyone saw it on the news, where they shot this individual multiple times within the back. I would love to see what their law is up there. I would just, on the surface, it does not look good. Okay. that's what I would definitely say. On the surface, it does not look good. However, I want to see everything before I would come out and say, what would I do different or what's there? I would love to see all of it.
Gotcha. Something I've learned being a student here at the University of Florida, one of my professors told us to, instead of watching little clips of interviews, actually going and listen to the whole thing so we don't take it out of context. So I think that's a really good point.
That's the same way that I learned professionally and academically, particularly where I went to school at college. you got to look at the whole thing before you render a decision.
Gotcha. So recently on January 10th, Patrick Warren Sr., he was shot, but his case is more related to mental health. What kind of training do officers go through as it pertains to mental health?
We have went through a lot as far as our training with mental health. Of course, the academy, and then the other thing that we went through was mental health first aid. And then the CIT training, critical incident training, that's a 40-hour block. And we're trying to get everybody through it, but then if I pull it off the street for 40 hours, then who's going to cover his or her neighborhood?
Right.
We realize that this is a real issue within the community. The other thing that we have did is we have a co-responder team where we have a police officer paired with a mental health professional from Meridian, and they ride together. And if we have a call that come out that they say that this person may be experiencing some type of mental health episode, we try to get that unit to come there. Now, we've been blessed. We only had one. The city commission approved last year to get two additional officers to work with a mental health clinician. And we just learned last month that we got a grant that will provide another mental health clinician. We're a police agency, so we don't hire the clinician. Meridian hires the clinician based upon riding with us, making sure that they're getting the right person to ride in the vehicle. But I hope to one day have enough that we can provide 24/7 to the community out there that we can do that. But that still don't absolve the officer, because even if I got one on the shift and then another call come out that is involving a mental health person, I would hope that that officer would have some aptitude to address an individual with their problems, because sometimes you have to not move so quickly and decisively really try to de-escalate the situation instead of escalate the situation.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that mental health is something that should fall solely on the police department, or should there be another organization that people call for that instead of calling 911?
Some agencies are, well, some communities are doing that. They actually have a mental health squad. I think there's a program called Kahoot up in Washington or Northwest up in there. They actually have a service that when you get those type of calls, they're the first responders. They get there first. Now, if they say that, okay, this is going to require a law enforcement presence, then they would send a officer in to assist them. So I like a combination of both, to be quite candid with you.
Okay. Makes sense. Yeah. I know in that case, particularly the day before, they did call and they did receive a mental resource officer, and the next day there wasn't one available. So like you said, you need more out in that field.
You need more, and then I have no problem with, like you say, a Kahoot squad or something like that, that work independent of the Gainesville Police Department. If a person called and said that my loved one or my relative is maybe going through an episode, send them maybe as a first responder. And if they get there and can de-escalate it, that's fine. If they can't, then we need to send a trained person to assist them.
Gotcha. So we talked about Black lives in relation to the police. On January 6th, we witnessed the storming of the Capitol, the insurrection. It looks a lot different, black to white. What are your thoughts on that?
I'll never forget, I was working January 6th, and my manager called me and said, "Are you looking at the television?" Mm-hmm. And I was like, "No, I'm prepared for a meeting." He said, "I think you better turn your television." So I turned the television on, and I saw the insurrection that we had up there. It sent chills to me. I'm a human being.
Yes.
It appears that they were trying to topple the government. If you're going into those sacred halls of Congress and you got them in that building, I was very, very, very concerned about individuals, Americans, going in there and doing something of that nature. Yes.
Got you. My issue with the whole thing was just the lack of resistance they received. Like you said, clips, we don't know the entire story, but if you look at Black Lives Matter protests over the summer, a lot of them were peaceful. They turned violent. In my eyes, I feel like they were attacked by the police. Mm-hmm. But like you're saying, just clips, so we don't really know what escalated before the video started, but that didn't sit well with me.
Yeah, I think that what is going to happen, and again, all I know is what's on the news.
Right.
I think Congress is going to do a full investigation of that. I think that some of the things that you were saying, some people say that the authorities were very passive.
Mm-hmm.
Would say, and their response, I can just, and again, just looking from the outside in and what I saw on the news, they were not prepared for what had occurred that particular day. I think as a result, 5 lives were lost. And that one day, and one of them was a Capitol police officer, and then it was, I think, one lady got shot by a federal official, and it was just a bad thing all around. So I certainly, when they released the report, would be one that would like to read that report to gain a better understanding of how did that occur, how you let that occur,
right. Definitely a lack of preparation.
Yeah.
So on J. Cole's song Chains, he has a line that says, "Life is all about evolution. You can dream, but not neglect the execution." My question to you is, where do we go from here as a country? How do we ensure that these events continue to diminish and stop happening at some point?
We as a nation is going to have to sit down at the table. All races, and we are going to have to do more than talk, but we're going to have to come up with a mandate as to how we move on from there. I think that we are somewhat polarized right now, and I do think that we're going to have to come together. Even law enforcement and citizens are going to have to sit down, not just on a national level, but let's break it down to a local a local level. We will have to come together, and we need to sit down and talk about our differences that we have. And I like to do more than talk. I would like to come up with some type of collective action. That's what I think needs to happen on the local front, all the way up to the national.
Yeah. What are some of the things that GPD does to build community trust in times like this?
One of the things that we did early on is so much, and I think we're going to have to probably reschedule to do the second part of this. But one of the things that I realized coming in, that there was a schism, particularly within the community of color and the Gainesville Police Department. I started with juveniles when I saw the horrendous amount of kids that were being arrested. I was able to get a grant from the Children Law and Policy Center. Because it's one thing, when I say, let's look at the entire picture, it's one thing for me to come in and say, oh yeah, this, 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 and this.
Right.
But we bought a group of attorneys from Washington, D.C., and they came in and embedded themselves in the community, and they looked at data. they looked at data. And one of the things that we did was we dealt with some of the low-hanging fruit. We were making a lot of arrests on school campus, for one thing. What I found was a lot of those arrests were for violation of probation. If you get suspended and you're on probation, your suspension order would indicate that you must be in school. Mm-hmm. Must be in school. So if I'm suspended, I'm not in school. So at that particular time, that deputy or that police officer could put you in handcuffs and take you to the juvenile detention center. Because you violated that particular order. But we came up with some things that we don't have to worry about that any longer. We called the probation officer. Let them do the work. The other thing that we tried to do is we weren't going to be out there as your bouncers. You know, if a kid violated an administrative rule, then you need to deal with it from a school. Then we came up with civil citations in the community. Instead of, okay, you go into a store and you shoplift. Okay? We finally got the state of Florida to adopt the civil citation ordinance. So instead of taking them to the juvenile detention center, we give them a ticket to court or a referral program called Teen Court that we can take these children to Teen Court where they won't have that record that's going to haunt them that particular line. Now, a lot of people say, well, Chief Jones, you're being soft on crime and doing those particular things. But adolescent brain development tells them they're not developed at that point. Mm-hmm. I think it went before the Supreme Court. It's, 25 years old? Is what the average person, the front lobal part of your brain, as far as your decision-making part, when it is kind of fully developed. And so are they going to make mistakes? Yes, they are going to make mistakes. We lowered that number down immensely. The other thing that this grant taught us, I went to Philadelphia, and there was a program called the Police Youth Dialogue. Okay, and I think that there were a lot of preconceptions about police officers, that we're these robotic individuals that we just want to go out and just throw people in jail and that's all that. So what we did was we looked at a program and that we had in Philly, and I brought it to Gainesville. I couldn't do it the way Philly did it, 8 hours, but what we did was about a 5-hour dialogue where we take some kids that we started off with just Department of Juvenile Justice kids that hated the police department. We put them in a room and we discussed our differences. We had a meal together. And I think it began to break down the barriers of the stereotypical view of police officer and the police officer's stereotypical view of particularly the youth of color, you know, because they had one conception of us and we had another conception of them. And so when I saw it up in Philly, I said, I got to bring this game to through the grant, we were able to fly a group in to actually teach us and facilitate some groups for us. Now the Sheriff Department, as well as the Gainesville Police Department, we engage in those particular things. We also bought a program called Procedural Justice that you'll see that was during the Obama era that they felt that is a curriculum where you give people a voice, you listen, instead of just come on the scene and I know the answer and stuff like this here. I just want to find me another problem. They can arrest and blah, blah, blah. So we also did that particular program. I can tell you so many that we actually have a program that deal with high-risk African-American males known as the Riker House. You deal with those individuals on a 4 or 5 day basis, where you're trying to change some of their behavior and their mindset. And so it's a number of things that you do. But the bottom line is you have to reach out and communicate. All these programs have a communication piece to it. And sometimes people are going to tell you things that you don't want to hear. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you have to learn to accept that. And understand where they're coming from, so that we can kind of meet halfway.
Yeah, I get both those parts. Definitely the second part about criticism, I struggle with that from time to time. I don't like to be told that I'm doing something wrong. I'm growing and I'm getting more used to it.
You're human. Yes. You're here with me. Sometimes, oh, it's some foul things, you know. you just say, okay, I understand this is where they're coming from, but maybe some experiences that they saw that have led them to think of a police officer this way, you know, and so it's something I have to practice every day. Because I've been cursed from A to Z, and then back up again. So it's something that you have to practice. Yeah. Nobody's perfect,
right? Yeah, and then the other thing that I always, sometimes you come in and you think that you know how things are gonna go, and you really don't know that person on a deeper connection than you would on the surface. So having those conversations, getting to know what their life is like, is really important.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on my show. Is there anything that you would like to add before we wrap up?
Our doors are always open, and we are not perfect. We are always looking for what we could do better. I'm open to suggestions.
Gotcha. Though I'm hopeful, yes, I am hopeful for today. Take this music and use it. Let it take you away. And be hopeful, hopeful, and he'll make a way. I know it ain't easy, but that's okay, cause we hopeful. Faith Evans and Twista. Hope. Stay positive, man. These things are going to take time. Continue to hold on to that dream and focus on the execution. Look. I know you're desperate for a change at the pen glide, but the only real change come from inside, but the only real change come from inside, but the only real change come from. In cemeteries or in chains, I see men cry, but the only real change come from inside, but the only real change come from inside, but the only real change come from. Look at yourself in the mirror and be the change you want to see in the world. Stay tuned. That's the end of episode 14. Thank you all for listening. Huge, huge, huge shout out to the Gainesville Police Department and Chief Jones for taking time out of his busy schedule to have this conversation with me. I really appreciate his transparency and his thoughts on these trying topics. He said we're going to have to come to the table. One of these days, we will truly be able to say we live in a united country where we stand as one. It may not be today, next week, next month, next year, 10 years, 20 years from now, or even in your lifetime. But what we are doing today will have an impact on how this country is run for generations to come. Be tuned in to this country, tuned in to making this country a better place. It's all we got. Be on the lookout for more content and episodes. And until then, stay tuned. JJ, out.